On air earlier on.
You did, after I questioned, you know, having a cup of tea out and about, and yeah, down it went.
That's it. We're done. We are back tomorrow. The amazing Keith Lyon is back. We are back tomorrow at 4 o'clock. Is that correct?
Yes, I hope so. That's what they told me anyway.
For Weekend Drive. I shall leave you with Ellie. We'll see you tomorrow.
Have a lovely evening.
The voice of the UK.
And the home of the Premier League.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
BBC News at 7 o'clock. This is Nikki Cardwell. The Metropolitan Police says it'll investigate a number of new claims of sexual assault made about the late Harrods owner Mohamed Al-Fayed to assess whether other people could be prosecuted. The businessman died last year at the age of 94. He also bought Fulham Football Club in 1997, and lawyers for his alleged victims say they've been contacted with claims relating to his 16 years as its owners. And sports news correspondent Laura Scott is outside Fulham Stadium at Craven Cottage.
Lawyers representing women who've accused him of rape and sexual assault have revealed they have received several inquiries relating to Fulham during the period of Al-Fayed's ownership. These individuals have come forward since a news conference last week when barristers representing the late billionaire's victims said he was a monster who threatened his sexual abuse victims to keep them silent. Fulham responded by saying they remained in the process of establishing whether anyone at the club was or had been affected by the reports concerning Al-Fayed.
A man accused of committing a sexual offence within hours of being let out of jail under the government's early release scheme is understood to have been freed in error. 1,700 prisoners were allowed out on licence earlier this month to ease prison overcrowding in England and Wales. A senior medic has broken down in tears at the COVID-19 public inquiry as he described scenes from hell on intensive care wards. Professor Kevin Fong, who's a former national clinical advisor in emergency preparedness, said staff ran out of body bags. He told the hearing that more needed to be done to ensure that NHS staff were looked after in crisis situations.
This is the biggest national emergency that this country has faced since World War II. We need to learn after COVID, those lessons, and perhaps for me the most salient one is that we do not look after the people who deliver the care. If we do not care for the carers, they cannot care for our patients.
The Conservatives' former co-chair, Saeed Avazi, has resigned the party's whip in the House of Lords. She accused the Tories of hypocrisy and double standards in its treatment of different communities and of moving to the far right. A huge map of the Milky Way charting over 1.5 billion objects, including newborn stars, has been revealed by astronomers. They say the research, which comprises 500 terabytes of data, has forever changed their view of the galaxy. Professor Catherine Haymans is the Astronomer Royal for Scotland. She explains what we can learn from the map.
Any listeners out there who are lucky enough to live in a dark sky location will have seen that faint band of stars that arches all the way across the night sky that marks out the plane of our Milky Way galaxy. And what they've done is they've mapped out all of the objects in that arch of the Milky Way, but in the southern hemisphere, so looking into the centre of our Milky Way galaxy.
BBC News, it's 3 minutes past seven.
You've probably got a list of things your child needs for uni. Pans, cutlery, sheets, duvet, towels, you know. But this is a little reminder that they'll also need a TV licence to be covered to watch all the TV channels, live TV on streaming services and BBC iPlayer. On the downside, it's one more thing on your list. On the upside, you can continue to enjoy your favourite shows together on the family group chat. And they won't be bringing it home to be washed either. To find out more, search TV Licence Uni.
This is Five Live Sport.
With Eleanor Oldroyd.
Listen on BBC Sounds.
Yes, with 3 hours of sport on the way, after another disappointing result in Europe for Manchester United, we'll discuss whether Erik ten Hag is the right man to turn the tide.
I think you have to assess then the situation. We are in progress, but we made the choice to sign very young players. Now we have to work with the squad, and that takes time. I'm impatient, and I want to go straight forward.
From 7:30, we look back on the Olympics and Paralympics with some of the British heroes from Paris.
Emma Finucane. She is a blur of blue on a bike fizzing down the back straight in the velodrome. Can she bring it home into that final bend? Now into the home straight. Emma Finucane is going to get there and take the gold medal for Great Britain.
And from 9 o'clock, Steve Crossman will be here with EuroLeagues. The panel will be reflecting on the early retirement of a modern great.
Good header, great goal, Rafa Varane for France. Glancing header. Raphael Varane with the header. The faintest but most golden of touches.
This is Five Live Sports
with Eleanor Oldroyd.
Listen on BBC Sounds.
Yes, good evening. Welcome to Thursday's Five Live Sport. For the next 30 minutes, I'll bring you all the latest sports news, including hearing from the Manchester United manager, Erik ten Hag, and also former England Rugby League head coach John Keir joins us as we get into the business end of the season. And as autumn is nipping at our heels, coming up from 7:30, we're going to be reflecting on a golden summer for Team GB and Paralympics GB in Paris. I'll be joined by three-time Olympic medalist Emma Finucane, diver Noah Williams and swimmer Maisie Summers-Newton, among others, for the guest list Paris edition. And I'm delighted to say that we will be welcoming one of Five Live's stars of the Games, Paris born and bred Julien Laurent. He's also going to be part of EuroLeagues with Steve Crossman from Nine. So we're putting him to work this evening. But there is plenty of live European action happening right now. We start with Rangers, who are in Sweden playing Malmo. We're into the second half. And Kenny Crawford is watching this one for us.
Yes, Ellie. 61 minutes gone. Malmo 0, Rangers 1. So it's all going swimmingly in Sweden so far for the Ibrox side, on course for a precious 3 points to launch their Europa League campaign positively. Albanian winger Nedim Bajrami scoring his first goal for Rangers after just 58 seconds. He was in the right place to tuck in the rebound after Cyril Dessers' shot struck the post following a Malmo malfunction in defence. The downside for Rangers, Ellie, is that they've not extended their lead. Vaclav Cherny shot wide when he was clean through, and Bajrami himself passed when he should have shot, and Rangers have just had another opportunity there. John Souter forcing a save out of the goalkeeper. As for Malmo, top scorer Isaac Kiese-Tallin had a goal disallowed for offside, and the Swedes have looked far more potent in the second half than they did in the first, but it's still Malmo 0, Rangers 1.
Well, Tottenham get their Europa League campaign underway at home this evening. They're taking on the Azerbaijan champions Karabag, and Sahel Sahi is at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium.
Good evening, Ellie. This is one of the three competitions that Tottenham can seriously hope to win this season. So with that in mind, Ange Postecoglou, he's fired up the troops and got them focused for 8 match days ahead, starting this evening. The European Knights, they're back for Tottenham, and it's something Ange said was missing from last season, despite the expanded competition this term. The Tottenham team news is in, and they make 6 changes from Saturday's win over Brentford in the Premier League, with 18-year-olds Archie Gray and Lucas Bergvall both starting.
It is live Women's Champions League qualifying this evening. Let's start with Arsenal. It's a must-win match for them. They trail by a goal on aggregate after the first leg against Haken. Chris Coles is at Meadow Park.
A very wet Meadow Park as well, Ellie, and yes, must win. If Arsenal don't, it'll be the second consecutive season they fail to reach the group stage of the Champions League, which for a club of this stature and ambition is unthinkable. We know what went wrong and how to put it right, says head coach Jonas Arne. They struggled to break through a very organised Haken, and with the Swedish side likely to deploy similar tactics tonight, it could be an evening for patience. Beth Mead and Alessia Russo come back into the team. Leah Valti also plays. Frieda Marnham only on the bench. A genuine must-win game for Arsenal if they're to avoid the ignominy of a second season without Champions League group stage football.
Well, Manchester City have already kicked off against Paris FC with a 5-0 advantage from the first leg. Charlie Slater is at the Joy Stadium.
And they're already 1-0 up, and they were inside the first 2 minutes of the game. An absolute gift. Chloe Kelly stabbing the ball into an empty net after a horrible defensive mix-up at the back from the Paris FC defence and goalkeeper. It was 5-0 after the first leg. It's now 6-0 on aggregate. And at this rate, City are going to sleepwalk into the Champions League group stage for the first time in 3 years. We've played nearly 5 minutes. City 1, Paris FC 0.
And Celtic take on Ukrainian champions Vorskla Poltava at the Albert Bartlett Stadium, which is where we find Gavin Wallace.
Yes, indeed. Not long to kick off now. As we say, Celtic took a significant step towards the Champions League group stages with that narrow first leg win last week. Murphy Agnew, her clever turning finish in the fifth minute was the goal that sealed it for them last time out. And she starts again tonight, so that's good on the team news. And some other things around about this tonight. The hosts could also write themselves into the history books. Should they get that positive result tonight, they'll be the first ever Scottish women's team to make the group stages. Glasgow City have made it to the last 32 and last 16, but that was in the old format. This is the new format, and it's worth £420,000 to Celtic. And should they get through, every other club in SWPL1 will land themselves £17,000. So big night all round for the Scottish women's game.
Thank you very much indeed. We'll keep you up to date with all of those games and all the goals as they go in throughout the evening here on Five Live Sport. But let's turn our attention to Manchester United. They drew 1-1 with FC 20 in the Europa League last night. It was another disappointing result as their inconsistent start to the season continues. Well, next up for them, it's Tottenham at home in the Premier League on Sunday. And that's a game you can listen to right here on Five Live. And our chief football news reporter, Simon Stone, joins us now. They just can't get going, United, at the moment, can they?
No, there was a lot of optimism, Ellie, at the end of last season with the FA Cup win and then the new ownership bringing in a new chief executive, and then Dan Ashworth arrived as the sporting director, and then they got Lenny Yoro, the young France defender, in, and Joshua Zirkzee, the Dutch forward, and everything looked good. And then they went on pre-season and Yoro got injured and Rasmus Højlund, the striker, got injured. So then we start with injuries that they had last year. Then they roll into the season and they've just not had a sequence of results. They won two games after the international break. Before the international break, they were hammered at home by Liverpool, and then they stuttered against Crystal Palace last Saturday. And then last night, they were okay. They were in front. They probably should have scored more goals, but in the end, they conceded a rather kind of tame equaliser and ended up, with a draw. And that is where Manchester United are at the moment.
Well, manager Erik ten Hag has been speaking this afternoon. He insists that things are going in the right direction.
We are in progress. We made a choice to sign very young players, like last year, Højlund, like this year, Zirkzee, like Lenny Yoro, that are players who have we believe in them now in this moment, but also for the future, and we have to build them. And when I started, we spoke about more, and we had to make a switch there in the dressing room, and I think we turned the corner, and now we have to work with the squad, and that takes time. And of course, I'm also, it's not a good behavior for me, I'm impatient. I want to go straight forward, but also be fair, we also had success in the last two seasons. And again, we have to work very hard to bring another success.
Well, Erik ten Hag, Simon, says he's impatient, but the fans are as well. I mean, you can't blame them for being concerned, even if it is very early in the season.
Well, yes, you're exactly right. And he says there, quite rightly, he's had success over the last 2 years because he's won two trophies. And he keeps repeating this, but he also keeps forgetting to mention that Manchester United finished eighth last season, which was their worst performance of the Premier League era, really. And I think people are expecting more. I think the fans are expecting more. I think that game against City in the Cup finally offered a glimpse of what the future could be like. And we've just ended up, as I say, back really where we were last season, scratching around for the right team, scratching around for goals. And I don't know if it's difficult. I don't know if that's the right word, because as you say, it's early in the season, but it's just difficult to find the optimism that fans need on bad days like the Liverpool game and probably what's going to happen against Manchester City. Manchester United have got some difficult games just before this international break. Tottenham, you said, FC Porto away next week in the Europa League, and then Aston Villa away. They are hard games, and you want, if you're a Manchester United fan, something to hold on to in case the results don't go the way that you want them to.
And if they don't go the way that the fans want them to and everybody at Old Trafford want them to, I mean, it seems ridiculous to say it, but could Erik ten Hag be sacked?
Well, I think it'd be unlikely that that was going to happen, say, at the next international break. But then you have to look beyond that. If results don't improve, then he's like any other manager. And while he almost called for patience there, you know, I know, everybody knows that in the current environment in the Premier League, patience is a very, very scarce commodity. A lot of people, a lot of fans thought he was lucky to keep hold of his job at the end of last season. And he does have to deliver results and performances. There have been improvement. There have been improvement in the defence, but they are still short of goals. He said that to me in a question this afternoon. I asked him basically what the problem was, and he said, we're not scoring enough. Well, if you don't score enough and you concede, well, you're going to end up in trouble, and that will land managers in trouble, and that goes for Erik ten Hag or anybody else in the Premier League, probably, apart from Pep Guardiola, I would have thought.
It's a simple game at heart, isn't it, really, football? Interestingly, quotes today from Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, United legend, of course, former manager, saying that he would return to the club if he was needed. That would be an interesting turn-up, wouldn't it? And I'm guessing that there will be no shortage of candidates if he was to go.
Well, I mean, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, obviously, is a very polite man. And I guess that is the kind of leading question that he probably should have avoided, but he's kind of too polite to avoid, maybe. And he's talked himself into something. I don't see any kind of idea that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is going to come back to Old Trafford. And if Manchester United were going to go down that route, well, they've got somebody there on Erik ten Hag's coaching staff. I was watching him yesterday on Tuesday on the training ground, Ruud van Nistelrooy, who obviously scored, like Solskjaer, so many goals for Manchester United. He is assistant to Erik ten Hag, and you would think he would be the first port of call. There's obviously this kind of long-standing rumour about Gareth Southgate, basically because he gets on so well with Sir Dave Brailsford, who's on the board of Manchester United and also knows Dan Ashworth very, very well. But I think that's a bit further down the track. At the moment, it's Erik ten Hag's job, and it's his job to deliver results and performances, and that means getting more out of this squad than he has done in recent games.
Well, it was interesting. He was talking at the Oslo Business Forum, apparently, which is not a kind of, you know, the sort of place that you're expecting serious football conversation. I'll tell you what, somebody who's just walked through the door and has barely actually drawn breath. Julien Laurent.
Oh, hello, Ellie.
Jules, well done. You made it, on the tube.
Oh, the tube was a nightmare tonight. I'm sorry.
Can I bring you in straight away on Manchester United?
Of course.
So you haven't even drawn breath yet, but I know you had things to say about them. You know, we haven't really talked about the personnel United this season. And, you know, they're just not a very good team.
No, I don't think they are. They've been very average. And you can tell by their position in the Premier League table. They're 11th. They scored 5 goals. They conceded 5 goals. It's a 0 goal difference. They've only beaten Barnsley in the League Cup, Fulham and Southampton in the league. And that's it. And that's all they have to show for so far this season. And towards the end of September now. And I know some of the new signings arrived late. Some have been injured. I know they've maybe hasn't been always easy, but last night was so disappointing. And in a way, just summed up perfectly where they are now, really.
I was wondering, first of all, Jules, do you get fined for being late? That's football. That's what happens there.
Yeah, I put in the kitty.
Listen, if we're having a competition, actually, I had a 4.5 hour journey from Manchester to London.
Oh my, yeah, you had the mayor.
So I kind of win, I think. Stoney, sorry, go ahead.
I just think at the moment it is underwhelming, and I think there's a lot of, Jules will know more than me about Lenny Yoro. There's a lot seems to be thought of him. I don't know how much Manchester United are missing him. Last night, Harry Maguire played in central defence alongside Lisandro Martinez. Before that, we've had Matthias De Ligt playing there. Mazraoui has been quite good, actually, as one of the new faces. We've still got this situation with Marcus Rashford. It's weird that he scored 3 goals, then was left on the bench against Crystal Palace. He was back in the team last night. He looked quite good, but Manchester United couldn't kind of get goals through the way that he was playing. And I think almost Ten Hag is searching for this elusive formula that will put Manchester United on a winning run. But you look at the team and you think, will they score enough goals? Will Xerxes deliver goals? Will Hoyland deliver goals? Rashford, we know, can, but that was two seasons ago on a regular basis. I'm not sure Alexandro Garnacho is the player who's going to deliver goals week after week after week. Amad Diallo is a promising player, but is he going to score goals? I'm not sure where the goals in that team come from that would give you the confidence that week after week Manchester United can deliver better results, because the performances have improved. It's just that they don't turn into wins.
Simon, thank you very much indeed. That is our chief football news reporter, Simon Stone. There has been another goal in the Europa League this evening, Malmo against Rangers, and it is Kenny Crawford watching this one.
And it's another goal for the visitors, LA. Malmo 0, Rangers 2, and a goal of real quality as well. Substitute Ross McCausland, the Northern Ireland international, has caused all sorts of problems since he came onto the pitch. He picked up the ball just outside the box, kind of chested it down, took a couple of touches and smashed it left-footed, and it's gone in off the post to make it Rangers 2-0 up in Sweden, and definitely on course now for 3 points in their opening Europa League match against Malmo. They weren't fancied to get 3 points from this, so if they hold on and get it early, it'll be a really good result indeed. 77 minutes gone, Malmo 0, Rangers 2.
Thank you very much indeed, Kenny. Jules, if you want to go and get yourself a drink of water, since you've run from the
studio. I've got time?
You've got time. Because we're going to talk about cricket and rugby league for a few minutes. So Jules is going to be with us for our guest list on Paris in the next few minutes. But first, let us talk about the cricket, because pace bowler Josh Hull has been ruled out of England's tour of Pakistan with a quad injury. England have opted not to call up a replacement. Tomorrow is the fourth of five ODIs between England and Australia at Lords. Australia lead the series 2-1. We'll be joined by Henry Moran in a moment, but first he's been chatting to England bowler Matthew Potts.
I don't think we look at it in terms of pressure. I think we always look at it in terms of like, how's our game going? And we felt as though we were playing in the right way, the right fashion. It just hadn't came off, and you know, you've got to stay true to your beliefs as a team and how you play as a player, and I think we've done that at Durham and it paid off.
Was there any sense in the dressing room, right, we might need to slightly alter the style?
No, not at all. No, I think it's all about staying calm when you, there might be a little bit of pressure around that when you're 2-0 down. But I certainly didn't feel it amongst the group in the dressing room. We didn't feel the pressure, and I think everyone stuck to their game and just performed.
Special for you as well to be playing that part of the world, big crowds. You know what it means to fans up there.
Yeah, it's massive. Cricket in Durham is massive, and you know, as a kind of a whole, as an area, we all enjoy it, and it was shown by the crowd, and it's always nice to play in front of the home crowd. I think Bryden will have felt the exact same, so it's always proud to wear the England shirt at a home game as well.
What about you in terms of your bowling? How's it felt like it's coming out this year? It looks quick.
Yeah, it's come out a little bit quicker. It's obviously been a work on of mine to try and bolster them speeds up a little bit and try and be a little bit more effective, mainly with an eye on looking at subcontinent conditions, obviously needing a little bit more ball speed, things like that, just trying to work on a little things, a few tweaks here and there, nothing too major, just seeing if we can get it up a couple more mile now.
Jimmy Anderson been useful?
Yeah, been very good to have him around. You know, he's a massive legend of the game. There's so much knowledge there, and just to be able to tap into that on hand has been very, very useful.
So what's been the chat amongst the fast bowlers? Because there's some talk of a bit of friendly competition, inevitably, with places up for grabs.
Yeah, I think friendly competition's always healthy. You know, brings the best out in people, brings out that competitive nature. And, you know, the guys that get selected in the final 11, you know, they're going out there and they're at the best point in their game to go and do a job for the team. It's just about kind of keeping everyone on their toes and trying to, when it is your opportunity, try and seize it and hold down a position.
Ben Stokes, good news on the hamstring injury, and that'll be a relief, because I know he's been around the camp, but heading into Pakistan.
Yeah, massive. You know, obviously a team with Ben is always really good, so I think the fact that he's had the good news for that ahead of the Pakistan tour, that's a massive boost to the team. You know, I never thought that it was in doubt, but it's always nice to get the confirmation. I'm sure that Ben will be relieved with that, because he's been putting in a lot of hard work.
So plenty lying ahead for this group of England players. You heard Matthew Potts there talking to Henry Moran. And Henry, before they have Pakistan to deal with, they've got two more one-day internationals to go, and they must be feeling a lot more positive after the way they fought back at Durham.
I think they will be, certainly. And not just because of the performance, which was excellent, and the fact that they came back from a difficult position in the game. They were 11 for 2, chasing 305. And before the rain came, they were on course for victory. I think most importantly, they played in a way that showed a lot more control and certainly a sense that they're playing the 50-over format in a way that is much more suitable to the length of the game. And we've spoken a lot about how this England side plays so much more T20 cricket than they do 50-over cricket. And it's almost felt in this series like they found their way into 50-over cricket by going through this series and getting that experience on the go. Harry Brooks' innings the other day, 110 not out, was outstanding. And he has received a bit of criticism over the past couple of weeks because of what he said to me in that interview after the game at Trent Bridge, when he said this famous quote now, where, oh, you know, if we get caught out on the boundary, then who cares? But there is a sort of nuance in there. And what he meant, and he's clarified this since, is it's not a case of who cares, but more a case of you've got to go out there not fearing getting out and then making sure that you commit to whatever stroke you're playing. I think the other night, what we saw from England in that big partnership between Will Jacks and Harry Brook in particular, is there wasn't fear, there was commitment, not just in the attacking strokes, but also in the defensive strokes and leaving the ball as well. So I think a lot of boxes ticked the other night at Chesler Street. The question now is whether they can carry that on into the next couple of matches at Lords and Bristol.
Yeah, absolutely. Lords tomorrow, Bristol on Sunday. The series is still alive, but the weather might have a part to play.
Well, it might do, and I have to say both sides were training indoors today at the home of cricket, which is looking decidedly autumnal now, Ellie. There's orange leaves that have been blown and strewn across the various concession areas around the back of the famous old ground, and so it is feeling a little bit wintry. But we do think the forecast is getting a little bit better. There's due to be rain overnight into Friday morning, but we think once we get into the afternoon, things are looking a little bit brighter, and I really hope we do see a full game of cricket, because if nothing else, England against Australia, regardless of the format, at the home of cricket in front of a sold out crowd, it's always a really special occasion. And you add to that, from a cricketing point of view, Champions Trophy coming up in the new year, England will want to get as many miles in the legs playing 50 over cricket as is possible, because as we keep on saying, it's just not a format they play that much of.
Well, I saw an interesting sight a couple of days ago after the game at Durham, Henry, which was I was waiting for a train at Durham station, and the entire Australian squad and families also got on a train to London. So they're trying to save the planet as well, the Australians. But there's definitely quite a relaxed vibe around that group.
Yeah, there is, and they're such an experienced team, Australia. They'd won 14 ODIs in a row prior to that defeat at Chesterley Street, and they'd won their last 7 one-day internationals against England. So they're a very confident and experienced group of players. You consider the fact that this England one-day side, the leading run scorer for England in one-day internationals in this squad is Adil Rashid, a player who's batting at number 11 for England. So it just goes to show how little 50-over cricket England play. And you look at this Australian side, the likes of Mitchell Starc, Glenn Maxwell, Mitch Marsh, the captain, Josh Hazlewood, seasoned internationals that have played hundreds of matches and really do know their game. They're the world champions. They're very, very strong. And in some ways, it's the perfect test for an England side looking to try and find their groove in 50-over cricket. So they're a brilliant team. I saw them on the train up from Cardiff to Manchester as well during the T20 series. I think they weren't quite anticipating having to stand in the corridors outside the loos on the train. But, you know, it's part of the experience. I'm sure that they will have enjoyed the fact the journey from the northeast was a lot quicker on the trains than it would have been in a coach, I'm sure.
Henry, thank you very much indeed, and see you at Lords.
Look forward to it.
And a reminder that we will have ball-by-ball coverage from Lords on 5 Live Sports Extra from 12:15 tomorrow. Now let's move on to Rugby League, and the race to the grand final starts with this week's elimination playoffs. The first eliminator is tomorrow night, Salford against Lee Leopards. Live coverage of that match on 5 Live and Sports Extra. At Warrington play Helens on Saturday, and I'm delighted to say that joining us now, former England head coach John Keir. John, good evening. I mean, Wigan and Hull, KR, already through to the semi-finals. After finishing top two in the regular season, they could just sit and put their feet up, can't they?
They can, yes, Ellie. I mean, they can feel quite relaxed this week. Although Wigan have gone on a camp, a three-day camp, to get their preparations exactly right. They're very detailed in all the preparation. And obviously, Hull Kingston Rovers, they've been a revelation this season. They're the team everybody wants to watch because they're such a good rugby league team. So they'll be waiting in anticipation, but we've got two absolute cracking games in the build-up to that.
Yeah, so just run us through those two games, you know, because you're going to be on Saturday, you're going to be on 5 Live at Warrington against St Helens, and then tomorrow it's going to be a record crowd at Salford, isn't it?
It is a record crowd. It's the first playoff game that's been live on BBC television as well, so it's big with regard to that. And, you know, there's been a contrasting sort of build-ups. Paul Rowley arrested his whole squad in the last game of the season because they knew they were in the playoffs, and he gambled that there'd be no shift in placings, and it worked out for him. Whereas Lee, they've been playing to get into the playoffs. They've won 11 of the last 13 games, and it's been like a playoff game every week simply to get into the playoffs. So they really are battle-hardened. So there's a real contrast there in the preparation of the two.
Do you think it is going to be a Wigan Hull KR final? As you said, they were top two in the regular season, or can one of those four make it to Old Trafford?
Well, it's obviously Wigan and Hull Kingston Rovers. You know, by having this week extra preparation, it's really very, very important at this time of year because players carrying any bumps and bruises can get over them. But, you know, there's the Burgess factor with Warrington. Saints have got big game credentials as well, having won it in previous years. And Salford and Lee, they're just on the, you know, they're just enjoying being in there. So I can see at least one from the four getting through. But I think Wigan will be sat there waiting for them in the final.
Great stuff, John. Thank you very much indeed. John Keir, former England head coach. And you can listen to the latest Rugby League podcast over on BBC Sounds right now. Let's get a couple of updates from our live football this evening. The Women's Champions League, Manchester City are playing Paris FC. Charlie Slater.
We've played 26 minutes. Man City still leading by 1-0 on the night and 6-0 on aggregate. An absolute formality this. City will be taking up their place in the Champions League group stage for the first time in three seasons. City 1, Paris FC 0.
And Arsenal's must-win match against Haken has just kicked off. Chris Coles.
Yeah, what Arsenal would give for Manchester City's comfort. Rain pouring down at Meadow Park. We are 50 seconds in. The equation simple for Arsenal. They must win or they're out of the Champions League before the group stage for a second consecutive season. Arsenal 0, Haken 0, 1-0 to the Swedish side on aggregate.
So we'll keep you up to date with all the live football this evening between now and 10 o'clock. But it's time now for a very special show as we reflect on what was a truly magical summer in Paris as the French capital hosted the Olympics and then the Paralympics. Well, we can't really call it the Pulse to Paris any longer, so we're calling it the Guest List Paris Edition.
Emma Finucane is going to get there,
yes!
And take the gold medal for Great Britain in a new world record.
Gold for Bryony Page. It's a gold medal in the trampolining. Oh! She has done it. She has completed the set.
Gold for Maisie Summers Newton. It's a double-double. She's defended her Paralympic title in the 100 metres breaststroke.
It's brilliant from Dalian Williams.
Toby Roberts of Great Britain with climbing gold. Great Britain's first ever climbing Olympic medal.
It's GB who win the men's eight. A brilliant end to the week for the GB rowers to cap off a magnificent week of racing.
It's almost three since the Paralympics brought the Parisian sporting summer to an end, an emotional end, I think. And of course, we wouldn't have anyone else with us in the studio apart from Five Live's favourite Frenchman, Julien Laurent. I had a little tingle actually listening to that music.
Me too.
It just brings medal ceremonies.
It brings everything back, doesn't it?
It does, it really does. Can you believe it's 2 months tonight since we were commentating on the opening ceremony of the Olympics?
Was it?
Yeah.
2 months ago.
You, me, Ali Bruce Ball. You know, think about all those incredible moments.
I know.
During that opening ceremony.
Just that first night.
You know, Lady Gaga, you know, incredible musicians, you know, beautiful Paris landmarks. And all I can think about is Ali BB commentating on the Minions.
That has to be one of the highlights of the Five Live coverage of the Olympics, for sure.
Yeah. How do you reflect on it now?
In an incredible way. During the games themselves, after, even before, how privileged it was for me to be with you, Ellie, and all the Five Live team to be part of this incredible experience. Me, the football guy who's never really been at the Olympics before, and to be able to share that with the whole country, because this is what I think I've learned since coming back to London now, is there's not a day, I promise you, when somebody in the street or somebody I know that I haven't seen since the summer, whoever it is, that stops me and said, the Olympics on Five Live was just amazing. And it's all those memories that we've shared with people, that we've transmitted to people, given to people, on the radio, where people were just listening, wherever they were, in their house, in their car, at work, anywhere, really. And for them, and for us to make this incredible event, the Olympics and the Paralympics, live in that way, for me, will stay forever in my memory, and I think for a very long time in people's mind as well.
Do you know, it's odd, I almost feel like I haven't really processed it.
Yeah.
You know, because came back from Paris, straight into the remainder of the season, and haven't really had a chance to draw breath, but we're going to relive some of those great moments
this evening.
With some of the stars of the Games. I mean, it was an incredible Games for the Olympians and the Paralympians as well. So in the Olympics, GB was seventh in the medal table with 14 golds, second in the Paralympics with a remarkable 49 gold medals. And over the next 90 minutes, we're going to be speaking to, well, a whole host of medalists. We'll have rower Morgan Boulding on, climber Toby Roberts, diver Noah Williams, para swimmer Maisie Summers Newton, trampolinist Bryony Page. But first, I'm absolutely delighted to welcome somebody who I saw one of her medals, at least. She really came to the fore for Great Britain at the Paris Olympics. Cyclist Emma Finucane, a gold and two bronze medals at the Velodrome at Saint-Quentin-en-Yvelines. Emma, good evening.
Hello. Hi.
Hello, Emma.
Hello.
Well, I mean, how have you managed to process it? Have you reflected on it?
Yeah, I didn't realise. Obviously, it's been, do you say 2 months?
2 months since the opening ceremony.
Two months since, like, that to me is insane. Like, it feels like it was yesterday that I was watching that opening ceremony in the Celtic Manor, where we were preparing to get ready for the Olympics. And then, yeah, the week of the Olympics for me was insane. Like, I just can't believe that happened to me, and I got to experience being in that velodrome. The vibe in that velodrome was insane. The music, even listening to that opening, like that ceremony music, to me brings back so many memories of like receiving my medals and being there as part of Team GB. So yeah, I'm still living my dream of being Olympic champion and double bronze medalist. And yeah, I'm just taking each day as it comes. But yeah, it was such a amazing week and I loved it.
You know, I was almost expecting you to appear on us on the Zoom with your medals around your neck, like Mr. T, you know, because I guess you go everywhere with the medals. I wasn't sure. You don't have them around your neck, but are the medals with you somewhere? Like, what's the life of the medals in Emma Finucane's house?
Yeah, they stay with me. We actually went to Italy, me and my boyfriend, not long after, and we had, because we both won 3 medals each, and it was 6 kilos, and I had a little handbag, and I was carrying around 3 kilos worth of medals, and they're, honestly, they're insane, they're huge, they're really heavy, and they stay with me. But yeah, I remember carrying around that bag, and I was like, wow. And every time someone picks them up as well, they're like, oh, these are really heavy, and I was like, yeah.
Yeah, so to actually wear them around your neck, because you did a photo shoot, didn't you? I think you did a photo shoot for, who was it? I've seen it in Hello Magazine.
Hello, new moment. I've never done anything like that. And I think, yeah, after the Games, you hear all these stories about people's lives changing, and it's huge. I remember I was in my little bubble at the Games, and you're doing your little thing, and then you come out and people are like, oh, we watched you on the television. And I think for us as athletes, we don't realise how big the Olympics is, and obviously I know it's the pinnacle of track cycling, but yeah, people watch it, and I hope like young girls watch it and things like that, and inspiring people to get on their bikes, and yeah, doing things like Hello Magazine was insane, and little things like that are such like cool moments that I'll never forget.
Has your life changed? I'm sure you haven't, but do you feel like your life has, is it really different than 2 months ago, for example?
Yeah. I'm still Emma, I've changed, but I guess I get recognised a little bit more. I have more, there's more opportunities, I guess, as being an Olympic champion and Olympian. But yeah, my life hasn't changed massively. And I think for me, because my next goal of the World Championships in 3 weeks' time is a goal for me, that's kind of like taken over. And then maybe opportunities after that will arise again. But yeah, I've been saying yes to things. I've been enjoying my life more. I've been trying things. Like the Hello Magazine was really out of my comfort zone. I really enjoyed it. So yeah, little things like that I've said yes to, which maybe before I wouldn't have. So they'd be really cool.
So gold in team sprint, bronze in the Keirin, bronze in the individual sprint as well. So you were the first British woman to win three medals at a single games since Mary Rand in 1964. I mean, that is staggering. 60 years. Had you ever heard of Mary Rand before?
No, I didn't even know that was a statistic. I remember when I came off after the sprint and I was exhausted and someone came up to me, a presenter, and was like, oh, this is the first time like a woman's won three medals since Mary Rand. And I was like, oh, wow. And I think I didn't realise, yeah, obviously I wasn't chasing that, but it's really cool to hear that I've made history. And yes, that wasn't like an ultimate goal to me because I wanted to just do my best. But yeah, I didn't realise that was actually there, and now I've done it, and yeah, it's just really amazing that I could do that. And for British women in sprinting as well, it's really nice to see that it's like people like Victoria Pendleton and Becky Jones, like they're idols to me. And yeah, to have put women's sprinting back up, like up to where it was before, is, I think, is amazing. And I hope girls watching the racing and watching us ride are inspired to get on the track, because it's a really cool sport.
Now, you mentioned Victoria Pendleton, and Emma, I kind of want to sort of set the scene a little bit and paint a picture for people, because I was down at the track. I was down at the Velodrome for the Keirin final. So it was you and Katie Marchant, and you came through after you'd won your medal, and you were with the team GB press officer, who's also called Ellie, I remember. And we'd kind of had a little bit of a chat with us in among the team, and said, you know, Vic had said at one point, if Emma comes through, I would really like to, will you pass a message on to her? And so I thought, well, we can do better than this. We can get you to speak to Victoria Pendleton. So we got a pair of headphones. We polished them up. We had them there for you. And you came through the mix zone. And I said to you, right, somebody wants to speak to you. And you went, oh, my God, Victoria. And so we put the headphones on, and this is what happened.
Honestly, I feel so proud to be British and so proud to watch you. So, like, congratulations.
Thank you. I actually feel really emotional.
I'm sorry. Yeah. I don't mean to make you emotional.
No. But, like, you're literally one of my heroes. And, yeah, I just can't believe sometimes, like, the scale of the Olympics. And for me and Katie to be in that final together, she's one of my closest friends. And, yeah, that bronze literally felt like a gold. And thank you for supporting me the whole way. And, yeah, I just can't believe it.
Do you remember watching Vic growing up? Was she one of your heroes in London? And
yeah, for sure. Like, she's such an inspiration to women's sport and women's sprinting especially. And I heard the commentary you did on the team sprint say, like, we're not the weakest link, and you set that barrier. And I'm so glad, like, we're following in your footsteps. So, yeah, thank you so much.
Oh, my goodness me. Yeah. That's brilliant, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Thank you. Thank you so much, Emma. That's so, so sweet. Thank you.
Thanks.
Oh, I think that was one of my favourite moments. I had so many great moments in the games. That was one of my favourite moments. What was that genuinely like for you?
Yeah, I remember, yeah, when you passed me those headphones and I heard a voice and I was like, wow. And obviously, growing up as a girl, like, wanting to race my bike and watching her sprint, and same as Becky James. And I think it is inspiring, and you don't see, like, she's achieved so much in her career. And yeah, it's pretty cool to hear one of your heroes speak to you and say thanks and, like, support you. And I think for me, I was just overwhelmed by the whole experience of the games and getting that bronze medal in the Keirin, knowing I had another event to go. And I think it was really motivating for me and really inspiring, because she inspired me as a young girl, and I hope I can inspire young girls too. But yeah, that moment, even listening to them, I was like, oh, wow. yeah, I actually got a bit emotional.
I think we all.
Me too, yeah.
Tears everywhere, actually. I can come back to you in just one second, Emma. We're quickly going to get a football update. Charlie Slater watching Man City against Paris.
Yeah, 38 minutes on the clock, and it's now Manchester City 2, Paris 0. This time it was Bonnie Shaw with her first goal of the season. Sure, it won't be the last. Kelly on a plate, square on a cross, and Shaw taps it into an almost empty net. City 2, Paris 0, 7-0 on aggregate.
That's the Women's Champions League, UEFA Europa League as well. This is for the men, of course. Malmo against Rangers. Kenny Crawford.
Yeah, Ellie, full-time Malmo 0, Rangers 2. In the build-up to this match, Malmo teased Rangers on social media about the fact that Ibrox side had never beaten them. That's all changed now because Philippe Clement's side have carried out a marvellous mission in southern Sweden, scoring two and spurning several other clear chances. Albania winger Nedim Bajrami scoring the first after just 58 seconds when Malmo hit the self-destruct button in defence. Then 21-year-old Northern Ireland international Ross McCausland made it 2-0 on 76 minutes, a really precise left foot strike in off the post from the edge of the box. So 3 points to launch the Europa League campaign and a much needed injection of confidence to Rangers' season. Malmo 0, Rangers 2.
Thank you, Kenny. Well, triple medal winning cyclist Emma Finucane is with us this evening on Five Live Sport. I mean, have you thought about what it means to be a role model? Because that's what you are now.
I guess for me, like, I've always loved riding my bike. Like, I think it's such, like, a cool way to have exercise and do exercise. It's really accessible. And I think from racing my bike in front of people and going to the Olympics, I think for me, I didn't realise how big it was and how many people watched it. And I think I want to inspire, like I've said, I want to inspire young girls to get on a velodrome and get on a bike and not really care what they look like, because like you're going really fast and you're trying to use your body to do things that maybe you never think it would do. And yeah, I guess now I have a bit more of a platform and people kind of know who I am. I want to use that to get girls into the sport. And I think like Victoria Pendleton is to me like set that bar, and I think anything is possible. And yeah, now like after winning team sprint with the girls and not having got on medal in the team sprint in the Olympics before, I think that's really inspiring. And yeah, I'm inspired by the people around me, so I hope that I inspire people to get on a bike, because it is really cool and you can be an Olympian and you can go and chase your dreams doing whatever. So yeah, that's how I started. And yeah, to be called a role model is pretty cool.
Before the track even started, we had Laura Kenny with us on the show on Five Live.
Oh, yeah.
And with Chappers, I think you were not there. It was me and Chappers. And we said to her at the end, okay, if you had just to pick one British cyclist, athlete, who will do well in these games, who will be? And she named you. She said, Emma is the next big thing here. She's going to be amazing. I think she can win one gold, two medals, three medals. She was like literally bigging you up so much. And me and Chappers were like, yeah, yeah. We were really on the Emma bandwagon, but we were not sure either. Did you feel like you could do that? Did you feel like Laura said, you were ready for it, ready to win a gold, two medals, three medals, whatever? Or even to you, that was a little bit of a surprise till how well you did?
Yes, I heard people say before, like Laura saying that I could be really successful and maybe that's three gold medals or, yeah. And I guess for me, being an Olympian was a dream. Like, I've always dreamed of becoming an Olympian, being an Olympic champion, but obviously that's a really hard, it is really hard. And I find it really funny when people would say, oh, she could win three gold medals, because do you know how hard that is just to say that? I was like, to me, winning a gold and two bronze was more than I could have dreamed of. And I don't know. I don't know if I expected it, but I think for me, I challenged myself in so many ways. That week was so emotional for me. I pushed my body to limits I didn't even think I had. And that sprint medal in the final day, I don't know if you saw, but I was exhausted. Mm-hmm. And I was so content with how I composed myself on the track, with how I delivered myself to get those medals. And yes, I would have loved to come back with three gold medals. And I'm still like LA and I still want to push myself to get that. But for me, I'm just really proud of myself for doing that. And to have these people such as Laura Kenny to even say that and to even name me as a person, a really such an amazing feeling that people believe in me. And I think I just want to continue to use the confidence that people have in me for the next however long in my career.
Did you come home and immediately start thinking about LA, or do you have to just, or are you not that kind of a person where you think that far ahead? I mean, you say you've got, is it Worlds coming up as well?
Yeah. Yeah. I got the World Championships actually 3 weeks today or 3 weeks yesterday. Yes, I know people aren't doing it. Some people will do it, but I guess for me, because I'm 21 years old, I am quite early on in my career, and LA is on the cards. I'd love to compete for Team GB again in LA. I think that would be, yeah, that's a huge goal for me. But what drives me every day is to have smaller goals, and I want to work on myself, and I want to take each year as it comes, even each day as it comes. And I think after going to the Olympic Games, it is the pinnacle of track cycling, and it takes so much out of you because that's all you train for your life, basically. And I need to protect myself so that I am the best version of myself in LA. So I'm not sure what that looks like yet, but yes, that is in the back of my mind. But I have smaller goals, and I guess bigger goals too, that I want to achieve to get there and be the best version of Emma and take what I've learned from Paris, because I have learned a lot from Paris, taking everything I've learned and use that for the next however many years. But yes, as an athlete, your goalpost moves all the time.
Well, look, Emma, it's really great to talk to you again. Thank you so much for being on the show with us tonight.
Thank you.
And very best of luck for World Championships as well.
Thank you. Thanks for speaking to you.
Emma Finucane, gold and two bronze medals in the Velodrome in Paris. And it was just such a pleasure to see her compete. And actually, you know, she wants to be the best version of Emma, which I think is a great way of looking at it. But, you know, she's got people like Laura Kenny, people like Victoria Pendleton talking about her. She delivered.
She's 21 years old as well.
Yeah,
that's what... When Laura Kenny said Emma can achieve so much in these games, but in her whole career, and I'm like, yeah, I'm sure, but there's a difference between having the potential, I guess, in any sport and level, and then doing it, not just doing it in your local competition, doing it at the Olympics or doing it at the World Championship. But the Olympics has something extra, really, than the World Championships, whatever sport it is. So, I mean, at that age, really, really massive credit to her, and because she was amazing.
Did they allow you down to the Velodrome? Did you get in there?
No, I could not. Oh. Yeah, the timing didn't work on that second week. I would have loved to see it. It's one of the things that really I wish I'd gone down to, but there's always a next time.
It's always very special. It's always very hot as well.
Yes. Yeah, I remember ABB
saying all the time how hot it was down there. But yeah, it was an amazing, amazing thing. And that success for Team GB throughout the games. Let's before we talk to our next guest, let's get an update on the Women's Champions League. And it's Arsenal against Häcken. Chris Coles.
20 minutes in, still Arsenal 0, Häcken 0. Häcken 1-0 up on aggregate in the tie. Arsenal playing well, creating chances. The best falling to Beth Mead, fabulously found inside the penalty area. And her right foot shot was well saved by Jennifer Falk in the Häcken goal. Arsenal playing well, but no breakthrough yet. 0-0 on the night, 1-0 Häcken on aggregate.
And Man City, Paris, Charlie Slater.
It's half-time, City 2, Paris 0. Chloe Kelly inside the first 2 minutes and then Bonnie Shaw half an hour later. They're marching into the Champions League group stage. 2-0 on the night, 7-0 on aggregate.
Well, we are reflecting on Paris 2024, as we said, 2 months since the opening ceremony. And just under a month, no, just over a month since the Paralympics opening ceremony as well. So one after the other, we will talk to Maisie Summers-Newton a little bit later on about her success in the pool at the Paralympics. But what a successful games for GB rowing. The team won 8 medals, including 3 golds. It was their best ever haul at an overseas Olympics. And one of those gold medalists was Morgan Boulding, who was in the men's 8. And he joins us now. Morgan, good evening.
Hello, thanks for having me on.
Well, it's great to talk to you. Now, your race, the watching the eights race is always one of the most thrilling things in a rowing regatta, but it was the last race of the regatta. Did you feel like it was a long wait to get to you?
A long wait to get to what, sorry?
To get to your race before you finally got to race for the medals.
Oh, yeah, it's unbelievably long. I mean, you're sort of away from home for a good 8 weeks before the final. But the last sort of 2 weeks of that are at the Olympics, and it is a long period. What made it a little bit longer for me was that I got COVID a couple of days before the team were due to get the Eurostar out there. So a few days before we got there, I was thinking, oh, God, am I even going to race? So those few days of sort of taking COVID tests and being like, is it negative? No. Obsessively taking COVID tests until I was negative were definitely some long days. But yeah, it was a long process to get to the start line.
When you saw how successful the rest of the GB team was, Is it added pressure to you because then you come last and you want to do as well as the others? Does that ease off the pressure a bit because it's already very successful and yeah, you want to win, but the team has done so well? What kind of mindset does that bring, the success of others?
So I think our mindset is very sort of process driven. So we've tried to detach our emotions for our race from anything on the external. And what that meant was that we could watch other people doing well or even not doing so well, and we could be happy or disappointed for them in other events or other sports and not let it impact what we were doing. So that was quite relieving, that I could go and watch other sports and know that I could enjoy watching the Olympics, which is probably my favourite bit of television to watch, without sitting there thinking, oh God, I've got to do that tomorrow. Even if it was crews we knew, I was just, you know, happy if they'd done well, and that there was no like jealousy or pressure from any of that, because we just, you know, we were happy for them, but at the same time our project was our own project and it was separate from emotionally from those results.
And I watched the race back just before we came on air.
Me too,
Morgan, and I just, you know, the way the Dutch pushed you, I mean, you know, you were clear at the end, but they pushed you at the point where you were having to put so much in the middle of that race. And you looked well, all of you looked exhausted at the end, but you particularly, did you have to have medical attention before the ceremony?
I was absolutely fine. So I finished the race and my best friend sits behind me, and we sort of crawled out the boat, but we didn't really know that we were both sort of conked out, just lying next to the boat for probably 5-10 minutes afterwards. And then he sort of came round and looked across and was like, oh, it's Morgan lying there next to me. But they genuinely had to drag us to the podium tent to put our gear on and force us to put it on to get onto the podium, because the TV rights weren't going to wait for us to get dressed. So that was a little bit miserable for us. I just popped a couple of paracetamol and got out there. But yeah, we were absolutely done. But you were talking about you've just watched the race. I've just watched the race myself back. And it's not like I've been watching it nonstop since the Olympics. But
so
I actually sat in my
first time. Was it the first time you watched it back?
No. I watched it a few times. I just didn't want you to think I've been watching it nonstop since then. The chances of me watching it just before this interview. But yeah, I'm actually sat in the office of my old rowing club now. I've just chatted to the juniors and showed them my race here. And today's been amazing, but yeah, I've just watched the race myself, showing it to them.
So yeah, what was it like watching it for them? What were their reactions?
I think they enjoyed it. So what we've got is an overlay on the race of what our cox, the person who steers and makes the calls in our boat, what he said over our race, and that put together with the race is something that I don't think they've probably seen before. So I think as young aspiring rowers themselves, I think that was quite good for them to see. I did have to I had to censor it, though. There were a lot of beats in the second half of the race. But I think that just made them chuckle a bit.
So tell us a bit about the role of the cox, because I was watching it. I was wondering if you knew where the Dutch were, for example, because in athletics, they can even see at the big screen if they're running the 5,000 meter, for example. They know where they are. They know where everybody is. You know, for you, is it the same, or does everything go through the cox and then you know where you are and what you have to do? Or you're so much into your race that you can't actually really hear anything or see anything?
Yeah, you've kind of got it right. We race backwards. So that is the unique part of our sport, is that if someone's beating you, you can't actually see them. You know, if you're second in the marathon, you can see the person you're trying to get to, and it's almost a disadvantage not to see where they are behind you. But for us, if you're not winning, you can't see. So he's obviously staring the other way and can often make some awkward eye contact with our stroke man the other way. You have to kind of like not look at each other because it's a bit awkward. But yeah, he looks the other way. So he tells us what's happening in the race, and he's very much just the man who is. So we all know the race plan. Without Harry, we would all go and deliver a version of our race plan. We deliver our process. We deliver the version that we would best get out of ourselves under the pressure and, you know, under the pain of racing for that distance. What he does is he makes sure that when we're suffering and we can't even comprehend what's going on, like you can't even hear the crowd, like there's a kilometer of stands all shouting at you, we can't hear anything over there. What he does is he makes sure we're on that plan. And without him, you know, people's minds would be wandering. We'd be like, oh, what I'm thinking about how much it's hurting all of this. And he's just saying, no, you all need to come together and you all need to deliver what I want from you for this next part of the race. And, you know, we were, as you were saying, we were level with the Dutch up to the K, and we weren't. The Dutch, we've raced a lot before, and by that point in past races, we've been miles ahead of them, and they sort of rode back at the end. But what he did was, for that very first kilometre, he stayed very, very calm. And even though they were right next to us, maybe even leading a little bit, he stayed calm. As we come through the kilometre, the halfway mark, he's just like a crescendo of excitement, and it's just fired up. There were a lot more beeps in the second half of the race than the first half. The kids today found that quite funny. But yeah, he's just a crescendo of energy and emotion, and that just, from that point on, we're just taking seats and seats until we cross the line.
I think all coxes are quite noisy, aren't they? Harry Brightmore, it was your cox you're talking about. Let's quickly get news of a goal, shall we, in the Women's Champions League. Arsenal against Hacken, Chris Coles.
And it's gone to Arsenal, Ellie. They've levelled the tie, leading 1-0 on the night, 1-1 with Hacken on aggregate. Fabulous hit from Leah Walty, all of 30 yards out, nothing much on. Left foot shot, in off the crossbar, exactly what Arsenal needed. 29 minutes played, Arsenal 1, Hacken 0, 1-1 on aggregate.
Now, Morgan, if people are listening to the programme this evening and they were inspired by the Olympics and the Paralympics and they're thinking, right, OK, I want to take up rowing, but I don't go to a posh private school, or, you know, I would like my kids to do it, or my grandkids to do it. That's not your background, is it? You kind of slightly buck the trend when it comes to what we expect. And actually, Steve Redgrave didn't go to a posh private school either, we should also say.
No. And I think I went to state school in Cornwall, and moved up country to be close to races for my sixth form. It is a trend, but I don't think it is something that should stop state school kids. I don't think it's something that they're missing that private school kids have. I think it's much more of just seeing people rowing around you and seeing, you know, the environment in a private school. Like there's been so many people gone through private schools already that have done well. It's much more about seeing the people doing it that is creating this difference in the amount of students ending up at the Olympics. And I think in rowing, it is just about finding that inspiration and being inspired to go on, because I know that all of those kids in those state schools can do it. I mean, I've done it myself. There's nothing that really held me back. I just had to believe that I could do it, and I got there. So if you're in a state school right now and, you know, you think that you can't do it from there, that's absolutely rubbish. I feel like you just need to believe, and that's the extra bit that you have in those other schools, is that they are told to believe, and they've seen previous students do it. So you've just got to buck that trend now, and then going forward, you'll be able to look up to other kids doing it.
So do you think you're the first of a string of potential Olympic rowing medalists from Bodmin College? We should shout out your old school.
Oh, well, to be honest, since the Olympics, that, or maybe even including the Olympics, that has been my favourite day, going to Bodmin College and seeing the impact that the Olympics can have through me to my old school. I spent so much time there, and going back there and seeing the smiling faces and the impact that I had was just honestly one of the best days I've ever had in rowing. And there was a point where I think the kids weren't allowed to get their phones out or ask me to sign anything because there was trying to be like a schedule and keep things going. But I signed one year seven's diary, and then I turned around having signed it, and the whole about 200 year sevens were behind me with shoes. They had foreheads they wanted me to sign and everything, and I was like, this is such an honor, like this is not something I've ever experienced in life, but it's so heartwarming to know that I'd love to know that, you know, a few of those will then go to the Olympics.
But you're such a great role model, I think. And this is my question. Rowing is a mad sport, right? We all agree. We've all tried, Ellie and I, not you so much, Ellie and I, in the gym, bit of rowing. After 3 minutes, you say, this is not for me, right? So for all the people listening to